It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. After 20 years, House Speaker Paul Ryan is wrapping up his time in Washington. He rose quickly in the Republican Party, being sworn in as Speaker in October of 2015, making him the youngest Speaker to be elected since the 1800s. He sat down last week for a wide-ranging interview with the Washington Post. Tomorrow, he will give a formal farewell address at the Library of Congress. In his post-interview, there were serious moments talking about immigration policy and the federal deficit, and some lighter moments, like where he's headed on vacation after this Congress adjourns on January 3rd.
I probably shouldn't say this. My wife turns 50 pretty soon, and so she, for some reason, thinks it's cold in Wisconsin in the winter. So I'm taking her to the beach very soon after we're done, and then I'm going to do some hunting.
Paul Kane is the Washington Post's senior congressional correspondent and columnist. He sat down with Congressman Ryan last Thursday. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, you covered a lot of ground with the outgoing House Speaker and what his legacy will look like. What stuck out to you the most about your conversation with him?
I think that there was a real sense where he's very much looking forward to the end. I think he's looked at this as a 20-year project, and he just, you know, he's got the beard going right now. I'm not sure if it's going to be back when he comes back to the Hill this week, but he was out hunting over the Thanksgiving break, so he's had a beard going. He's not sure if his wife will let him keep it much longer, but he's a little bit wistful, and he's talking now in sort of legacy terms of sort of the things that he is proud of having done, and then the things that he is, you know, longing to wish that he had gotten those things done.
Well, one of those moments of pride was the tax plan, but an opinion writer at the New York Times pointed out that this greatest achievement for Paul Ryan was also one of the things that he told you was among his greatest regrets, the debt. And under his tenure, the federal deficit grew by just over $2 trillion. How did he reconcile that with you?
His longtime point has basically always been the spending side. He believes that you have to get the spending side of things in order, and it's not necessarily the revenue side. He's been sticking to this, and yet he also is the co-author of the big budget bill that, you know, blew up spending in a bigger and an even bigger way, both on the military and other domestic projects. So, you know, he has said that you could go after health care and reform entitlements like Medicare and Social Security. Those are the two biggest long-term drivers of the federal debt. But there's never been really the political will to do something that's considered so unpopular. And he was, you know, let's put it this way, let's be blunt. He failed in that effort to get people to sort of come on board and join him on that.
Well, at one point in the interview, you pushed back by saying that if the tax bill was so good, then why hasn't it resonated with Americans? And why did it not sell in the midterm election? What did he say about that?
This is where I feel like he was still just sort of holding back a little bit. He kind of hesitated and kind of said, well, I just wish we had more focus on that. And I said, well, you mean you wish the president had focused more on that? And it became clear that he was not happy that President Trump in those final 3-4 weeks of the campaign really was focusing on the caravan and border security, the caravan border security over and over again without touting any of the positive impacts of that tax bill. And so the only people out there talking about the tax bill were the Democrats, who were saying that it was a giveaway to corporations and the billionaires. And so it didn't really do a whole lot to help Republicans, politically speaking, in these elections.
He also regretted the congressional inaction on immigration, which critics have said he is also partly responsible for. What was his take on the reasons for the congressional inaction over immigration policy?
You know, that's a sort of similar, it's a lot like It's a lot like the debt issue and entitlement reforms. There are some ideas of what to do out there, but just not a lot of political will because it is such a hot button issue on both the left and the right. And, you know, he does say that he thinks there should be a stronger border security component, but nobody has figured out a way to make the trade-off of stronger border security in order for a path to citizenship for especially these Dreamers, the undocumented immigrants who were brought here illegally as children by other adults. It's there. It's for the taking. The deal can be made to some extent, but nobody can figure out how to make enough Democrats acceptable to some enhanced border security versus Republicans willing to accept having this path to citizenship. And it just doesn't get there. And every time every time it comes up, it just ends in gridlock. And they barely even have real debate and real votes on the issue.
He said his compromise immigration bill last summer satisfied the president's four pillars. Can you remind us what the four-pillar threshold was going after?
Well, they're going after having enough border security to stop, to reduce the number of border crossings, and to also allow for, especially these Dreamers, to allow for them to have a path to citizenship. Republicans were even willing, the number that they had come up with was up to 1.8 million potential citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a higher number than even Democrats were pushing at one point. But then they just sort of pushed up higher on the border security, and internal security became the real sticking point where Democrats were fearful that they would be empowering ICE raids to happen in cities and towns throughout the country. Not border security was their fear. It was that fear that you would have these a lot more ICE agents raiding farms and other workplaces in search of illegal undocumented immigrants, and that was really where the deal fell apart.
We're talking with Paul Kane, the Washington Post's senior congressional correspondent, about his interview last week with retiring House Speaker Paul Ryan. It was wide-ranging and removing through some of the topics they discussed. Speaker Ryan talks about the way that he was elected House Speaker and that it's different from how Democratic House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi is taking her gavel. Tell us about what he saw are the different circumstances and how they each rose to power in their party.
Yeah, so 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago, John Boehner, the House Speaker at the time, decides he's had enough with fighting with his right flank, the House Freedom Caucus, and he decides he's going to retire. Kevin McCarthy was the presumptive heir to the speakership, but his support fell apart among the Freedom Caucus, and there was just disarray for several weeks. And they turned to Ryan because he was a respected committee chairman. He had been the VP nominee in 2012 and was viewed as more clearly conservative than McCarthy, so he had more support. And Ryan came in and he basically said, I'm not begging anybody for a vote for this job. I'll do this job if you're all willing to get behind me. He's right. This is a different position than Nancy Pelosi is coming into the job. Pelosi is sort of wheeling and dealing with her critics in order to placate them, giving them committee assignments and other such things. But what Ryan sort of overstated or understated, really, was he then, once in office, once he had the speaker's gavel, he ran into a lot of the same problems as Boehner did. He ran into these Freedom Caucus guys who kept pushing farther and farther right, and it really created a lot of gridlock and deadlock among House Republicans.
You noted that when President Trump was a presidential candidate, Ryan would chastise him. But now he said he chooses to keep those conversations quiet. What were you hoping to get out of him by that point?
You know, I would just like him to give us one sense of what those private conversations are like. You know, when Trump was during the campaign in 2016, when Trump was criticizing a judge in Indiana as being unfair to him because he was of Mexican-American descent, Speaker Ryan said that that was, you know, the textbook definition of a racist statement. He just doesn't do that anymore. As once Trump won the presidency, any critique is done behind closed doors, and it's left us all sort of wondering what really is said. He keeps telling, one of the things he hit on was that he doesn't think it's necessary to have passed legislation protecting Bob Mueller for his investigation into Trump, and I just begged. I said, well, why? Why do you think it's not necessary? And he cited that, oh, private conversations. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to believe when you see Trump out here savaging the special counsel investigation every single day, and then Ryan just says, oh, no, we don't have to worry about it. He's not going to fire Bob Mueller. And I just looked at him sort of exasperated, saying, but how can we believe you because of this supposed private conversation?
Do you think this is the last we'll be seeing of Paul Ryan on Capitol Hill?
You know, he has said privately, and he said it again publicly a couple times, that the only job left in politics that he thinks he might take one day is ambassador to Ireland,
mm-hmm.
that he has discussed it with his wife, Jana, and that one day, you know, in their 60s, he would love to go be the ambassador to Ireland, and in his own belief, he would like it to be a united Ireland with the North and the Republic of Ireland coming together.
Well, Paul Kane, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, anytime. Anytime, Kate.
Paul Kane is the Washington Post's senior congressional correspondent and columnist. He talked with House Speaker Paul Ryan last Thursday. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.